The Weekend Game Plan. Listen live Saturdays and Sundays from 7 to 9 a.m. on TSN 690.
First things first, I'ma say all the words inside my head. I'm fired up and tired of the way that things have been. Oh, ooh.
Then back out for Subban. Right side, Neal. Oh, score! James Neal, the score! And the Predators win it at 9:24 of overtime.
I'm the one at the sail. I'm the master of my sea. Oh, ooh. The master of my sea. Oh, ooh. I was broken from a young age, taking my soak into the masses, writing my poems for the few that look at me, took to me, shook at me, feeling me, singing.
Plenty of chances to score. Didn't do it, and make a couple mistakes, and it cost us.
Weekend Game Plan presents the Habs Breakfast. Intel from the rink, the locker room, and away from the ice.
All right, welcome back to Weekend Game Plan. You heard the splitter. Time for a little hockey talk here on the program. You heard the clips. That was James Neal last night in overtime at Anaheim as the Preds take a 1-0 lead in that series. And the dejected voice of Alexander Ovechkin on, I guess, clean out locker day, Capitals done for the year. That cackle was Amanda Steyn, across for me.
Hello.
And
I saw that one coming.
Yeah. I know.
Saw that one coming.
I know. As most of the people in the on the whiteboard behind us had the Capitals, the hosts, we're all done. And on the line from the Montreal Gazette and Habs, hockeyinsideout.com, it is Stu Cowan. How you doing, sir?
Good, Matthew. How are you?
I'm well. Now, earlier we pontificated that perhaps you were on your balcony, outside, taking a walk, something outdoors before this call.
I was having a coffee outside on my balcony.
Boom! Did I nail it, Trent Dewey?
You got it.
I got it, right?
Yeah, nailed it.
Wow, I nailed that.
My favorite spot on earth, my balcony in the backyard.
Yeah, hey, nothing wrong with that, my friend.
Yeah.
Well, holy, you have to like indulge in these moments because they're so few and far between lately.
Exactly. You know? There was a ball of fire in the sky yesterday. I don't know what it was, but...
you took advantage of it.
What was in that coffee, Stu?
I'm sorry?
What was in that coffee?
Just one milk.
Okay, all right. I thought maybe, you know, if you're seeing balls of fire in the sky. All right. Now, Stu, before we get into the hockey talk here, I have a very important question for you. You're a professional, seasoned. You've been around for many, many years covering all kinds of sports in this city. I need some advice. Tomorrow, just after 9 o'clock, just after 8:30 tomorrow in studio, we have Francois Abanda, the professional Canadian tennis player. Just after 9 o'clock, I'm going to play her in table tennis live on the Facebook TSN 690 page.
I love it. I love that response.
Why are you laughing,
that
Stu? That is not good, Stu. Now, she's...
Did you have a ping pong table in your basement?
Growing up, yes. High school as well.
There might be some hope for you then.
Ask Dave Trent to do it. He's in my corner.
Yeah, he's quite good. Still.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
That's the thing. I know a buddy of mine had a ping pong table when I was a kid, and he used to beat me badly every time I'd go over there. But that's the key. If you had one in your basement when you were a kid, you have a shot.
Oh, all right. I like it. Okay. All right. Now, any advice in terms of psyching her out?
Good question. Good question. Oh, you could go the reverse route and just play the first game like you don't know what you're doing.
Oh, I like that. Okay. All right. Moving on.
It's called sandbagging, I think, right?
Now, Stu, as somebody who's covering the Montreal sports scene, does it add some ammo, some topics for you when PK Subban does something great on the ice still, or is that beating a dead horse or what?
Without a doubt. I mean, it's almost a year, coming up on a year since the trade, and you know, there's no bigger, the two biggest lightning rods in sports in Montreal are PK Subban and Eugenie Bouchard. And anything you write about them, you will get people either with them or against them. It's nobody seems to be neutral on either of those two athletes. But, you know, PK is being PK. I mean, he's doing exactly what he did when he was in Montreal. The bigger the games, the better he always played when he was here. He's finally got a team that seems to really appreciate his talents. He's got a defensive coach in Phil Housley there who played the game and saw the game in a similar way that PK does, which has obviously helped him. You know, they have an incredible top four defense there in Nashville. And, you know, when the trade was made, David Poile said, PK's the modern-day defenseman. That's what today's hockey game is. It's skating. It's carrying the puck. having possession of the puck, and that's what PK does. And, you know, Shea Weber's played great for the Canadians. He's more of an old-school defenseman. You know, when he's getting the puck out of the zone, more often than not, it'll be off the glass and get it out, which gives possession to the other team. But, you know, PK and Carlson and all these sort of modern-day defensemen are the guys that can skate it out, can pass it out, and do they make mistakes? Do they cough up the puck once in a while? Of course they do, because they have the puck on their stick a lot. But it's the way the game's going, and Nashville's a fun team to watch. You watch them play, and the way they come out of their zone, and those four defensemen are a real treat to watch, and PK's fun to watch. I mean, PK's finally with the team that really wants him, an organization that really wants him. And he's obviously wants to play well for them, and he certainly is. I mean, he had 28 minutes of ice time last night, set up the winning goal in overtime. And after the goal, you know, nobody was happier on the ice after that goal than PK with his celebration afterwards. So, you know, it's a PK being PK, and he seems to be having a lot of fun in Nashville. And I had a chance to go there this year to cover his first game in Nashville. And anybody who hasn't been to Nashville, I suggest they go. It's just a fantastic city. If you can't have a good time in Nashville, there's something wrong with you.
He was there, and he had the poise to give it to Subi, and PK made a great play selling the shot, and then got it over to me and found a way in. So it was a good feeling seeing it going.
There's James Neal yesterday after that, after the overtime winner, and talking about that assist that you had mentioned there, Stu. And I had a question for you that somebody asked me yesterday, and it was about our prime minister saying that we should all get behind the senators, and they are Canada's team now. And I'm wondering what you think about that as a whole, not necessarily the prime minister saying it, but do you think it's possible for people in this city in particular to get behind the notion of Canada's team?
It might be harder in this city just because of the playoff history with the Senators and the animosity some Canadians fans
thought the
have.
Exact same thing.
But for the rest of the country, I can see it. I mean, the Senators are a team that's they're pretty easy to like. I mean, Carlson's an exciting hockey player. He might be the best player in the NHL right now. And he's fun to watch, and they have a lot of underdogs on that team. They're MacArthur, you know, they have a lot of guys that are easy to, you know, they have guys that are sort of easy to cheer for, you know. And you have a guy like Dion Phaneuf, who, you know, whoever thought, you know, Dion Phaneuf in Toronto, he's another one of those guys who seems to be, he can't be the guy, sort of like Phil Kessel, you know, but when they're the sort of second guy, you know, he's played really well. He's played well with Ottawa, and he's sort of a forgotten guy there. So, you know, and there's a little bit of a Montreal connection there, too, with Mike Condon as the backup. I don't think he'll be seeing any ice time unless
something goes terribly wrong.
And then you got Guy Boucher also. You know, Guy Boucher with his Montreal connection, and Martin Raymond, two McGill guys that, you know, wherever Guy Boucher goes, he brings Martin Raymond with him. And they're a pretty good pair when it comes to maybe the good guy, bad guy coaching strategy type thing. Although I think Guy Boucher has toned down his act a little bit since he first started in the NHL with Tampa, realizing it's a little different coaching minor league or university compared to coaching NHL players. But he's done a remarkable job with that team. And Guy Boucher is a good guy, and so is Martin Raymond. And they're guys that are easy to root for. And I can see, as I said, just the fact in Montreal with the animosity from some of the playoff series against the Senators, it might be a little different. But across the rest of the country, I can see it. And it would be nice to see a Canadian team win the Stanley Cup.
It would. It makes me wonder, though, if Justin Trudeau, who we know grew up rooting for the Montreal Canadiens, deep down is, you know, just saying these things because he's politically correct, and on the inside is still wondering what Marc Bergevin did at the trade deadline and why.
Yeah, that's a good point, Amanda. That's quite possible. He's playing to his constituents in Ottawa, definitely. But again, I mean, the teams that are left, I would say that most Montrealers are either, I would say there's a lot of Montrealers cheering for the Nashville Predators, and I would imagine there's a lot of kids and a lot of staff at the Montreal Children's Hospital cheering for the Predators.
Absolutely.
Also.
Weekend game plans, Habs breakfast here on TSN 690. We're here till 9 o'clock. Stu Cowan of the Montreal Gazette and HockeyInsideOut.com on the line. Amanda Stein of TSN 690 in studio. Elsewhere, the Senators take on the Pittsburgh Penguins tonight. Most folks are taking the Penguins. Stu, do the Senators have a shot in this series?
I don't think so. I mean, we did our playoff predictions for post media before the playoffs started. I picked Pittsburgh to win. I think anytime you have Sidney Crosby on your team, you got a pretty good chance of winning. And Sidney Crosby's continuing to prove that. And, you know, the Penguins just have the depth, and they have the character. You know, Letang, their number one defenseman, is out, and they just keep rolling along. You know, Crosby gets hurt for a game, and they roll along. It's a team that can battle adversity, And, you know, the Canadians used to have that no excuses sign up in the locker room. Well, the Pittsburgh Penguins don't need to sign up in the locker room because they don't have excuses. Whatever happens to that team, they just roll along and they keep winning. And a big part of that is having the best player in the world on your team in Sidney Crosby. And also when the best player on your team is also the hardest working player on your team, that's contagious through the locker room. And you watch Sidney Crosby win puck battles and fight for the puck along the boards. And he's so strong, his lower body able to hold guys off. I mean, he's a 200-foot player. You know, there was the game, I can't remember which game it was, this was the last series one, you know, he went down, blocked a shot in his own end, got up, made the pass or the breakout coming out of his zone, and he went down the other end and scored. And it's, you know, I know in the intro you were mentioning Alex Ovechkin. I remember talking with an NHL scout a few years ago, and he said the difference between Sidney Crosby and Alex Ovechkin is that Sidney Crosby wins championships and Alex Ovechkin wins individual awards. And, you know, Crosby has beaten Ovechkin at every single level, going back to the under 18, the juniors, the Olympics, the Stanley Cup playoffs, the World Cup, you know, whatever the Ovechkin's team with Ovechkin on it has never beaten a team with Sidney Crosby on it in an important series or an important game.
And Ovechkin, by the way, finished minus four. We'll get to the Capitals a little later. Minus four in the postseason stats. Just chatting with Stu Cannon on the line and Amanda Stein here in studio. Amanda, do you agree? Is it Pittsburgh all the way in this series?
Well, I think that the Sens will win at least one game. I don't think it's going to be a sweep.
So the answer is yes.
I don't think it's going to be
a
sweep.
At this stage in the playoffs, you're not going to get a sweep.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't think it'll be a sweep. But if the Senators do it, what a remarkable series that will end up, or a remarkable feat that would end up being. But just a discrepancy between the two teams. And it's no knock on the Senators, you know, as Stu was mentioning. It's just... The Pittsburgh Penguins are just so good. They've got so much depth. And I was listening to Kyle Turris talk when I was ruffling through some clips, and he's just talking about the depth, and he goes on, and you're listing this player after that player. And when you have Crosby and Malkin and, you know, Gensel, like the names just keep going. And I don't think that the Ottawa Senators have what it takes to compete on a day-in, day-out basis as they will have to do in a seven-game series.
No, as I said, I think it comes back to Crosby too, Amanda. Just, you know, when your best player is blocking shots and doing all the dirty work and going
and
to the
chopping off the fingers of the opponent.
Oh, nice. You know, rightly or wrongly, coming back after, you know, that hit to the head and continuing to play. I mean, when you look at the guy on your team who's the best player and he's also the hardest working guy, well, you better pull up your socks and be ready to work pretty hard also.
Yeah.
And, you know, they talk about leading by example. There's no better example of leading by example than Sidney Crosby.
And it's, like I said, it's no knock on the Senators. But also, if you look at their lines, like they've been remarkable, and I think they've surprised everyone in the hockey world to get to where they are. However, when you have Kyle Turris and Derek Brassard down the middle, that's fine. But the fact is that I think they're both better as number twos. So they've got kind of two number twos as opposed to a one and two. And I think against a team
Pittsburgh's
like
Pittsburgh's got two ones. Yeah,
and I think against a team like the Ottawa Senator or the Pittsburgh Penguins, man, I keep messing those two up. That will be exploited.
Well, Pittsburgh's got two number one centers.
Yeah, exactly.
You could argue, too, that Nick Bonino would be a number two on many teams as well.
Well, there's another hardworking guy who does you know, all the dirty work and just works his butt off every time he's on the ice. And you know, go down the Pittsburgh lineup and find me a guy who doesn't play like that. You know, I was mentioning Phil Kessel earlier, and look at you know, the way Phil Kessel works in Pittsburgh and the style of game he's playing there compared to when he was in Toronto. As I said, when you look at Sidney Crosby playing the way he is, how can you not give 100% every time you're on the ice?
You know, Jim Rutherford gets a lot of credit, Executive of the Year last year for the trades that helped them win the Stanley Cup. But you look at that system well before he got there, when Ray Shero was there. All these guys that come up, they make an impact, whether it's Rust or Kunackle or Connor Sheary. I mean, that development in that system is just amazing. Wanted to bring this topic up. And, you know, as we see Ottawa, a team that, you know, struggled to clinch a playoff spot in the final days before the season ended, and then you have Nashville, a team that finished dead last in terms of the playoff seedings in the Western Conference, albeit with a bit of a cushion. They were never really in doubt. What does that say? What does that say about the NHL? What does that say about these particular teams? And how in the world do you go from barely making the playoffs to flipping a switch and getting to where you are right now?
Because it's 82 games and there's so much parity. So it's difficult at that very end, that stretch there. You're competing on such an even level with so many teams that only 8 teams are going to make it. So you're fighting for those points. Whereas once you get into the postseason, it's very cliche to say, but this is probably the one cliche I agree with, is that it is a new season and everyone starts at zero.
Yeah, and if you look at, you know, I don't have the standings in front of me, but, you know, most seasons, if you look at the difference between the team that finishes first in the conference and the team that finishes ninth and out of the playoffs, it's usually around 12 points, 14 points, something like that. And let's say if it is 12 points, that's one extra win a month during the season is,
yeah,
the difference between
it's so
finishing
marginal.
First and finishing ninth and not making the playoffs. So, and just look at the amount of teams that were in the playoffs last year that aren't in it this year. And it just shows you how difficult it is, you know, just to make the playoffs. And they're the parity in the league, in a salary cap league. It's been a salary cap league for quite a while now. And, you teams like Chicago, you win the cup and you got to get rid of some of your better players because you can't afford to keep them all. And that parity is what's made the NHL the way it is now. And the NFL used to always say, you know, on any given Sunday, anybody can beat anybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's the same in the NHL. You know, when you get to a 7-game series, it's a little bit different in that the best team will normally come on top unless mm-hmm. there's a goalie who stands on his head during the series. But, you know, there's no terrible teams in the NHL. You know, Colorado is,
except for Colorado. That's what,
well, Colorado was terrible this year. They were a dysfunctional team right from the beginning when Patrick Waugh left. They started the season in a mess. But I mean, it wouldn't be shocking if they come back and make the playoffs next year, depending on what changes they make during the off season, whether they decide they're going to gut it and rebuild, or whether they're going to, you know, they have a young nucleus there to build from still. So it's parity, and it's also, I think, you know, the Kings won the Cup a few years ago there.
That's
when
right.
they got in. Their last team to get in, they got in on the last day mm-hmm. of the season, and I think that they're battle-tested, and they, you know, that team like that has been playing playoff hockey for a month heading into the playoffs.
Yep.
And so they're geared up for that kind of hockey, that must win kind of hockey. So I think it's a mix of that, and also just a mix of the parity in the NHL. And a team like Nashville comes in as a number 8 seed and sweeps the number 1 seed in the first round of the playoffs.
Yeah, and just to your point, I have the standings in front of me. Nashville finished with 94 points, whereas Chicago, the top seed in the West, 109 points. It's not a huge margin. It's not a huge margin between first and last.
No. I mean, as I said, it's usually it's always like between 12.
Yeah.
It's never 20 points. It's always
exactly.
Unless there's one team that's just running away, which doesn't really happen that often now. So I said, if it's 12 points, that's one extra win a month during mm-hmm. a 6-month season.
Yeah, it's an interesting way of looking at it. All right, elsewhere, James Neal gets the game-winning goal last night. He crunches Montador into boards and then takes a pass from Subban and scores. That's a left winger with some speed, a pretty good shot, a history of scoring well in the NHL. Does that kind of remind you of what the Canadiens were hoping to get on their top line on the left wing?
Yeah, I guess. That's a pretty good point. And again, you know, people have really been dumping on Max Pacioretty, and he didn't get a goal and he only had one assist. But again, if you're a one trick pony team and you have one guy who's really the scorer, it's pretty easy to shut a guy like that down in the playoffs if a team only has to focus. I mean, look at coming into getting prepared to play the Penguins. Okay, you got to shut down Crosby, you got to shut down Malkin, you got to shut down Kessel, you got to shut, go down the list.
Sheary.
Look at the Canadians. Okay, you got to shut down Max Pacioretty
and maybe we're good.
And maybe Alex Galchenyuk, but if we shut down Max Pacioretty, we're going to win. And Alain Vigneault spoke about that during that series, and that's what they did. Their game plan was to shut down Max Pacioretty, and they did. So, you know, Canadiens fans, it's easy to dump on Max Pacioretty, and he's a big target with the C on his chest. But again, the Canadiens didn't make the playoffs this year without Max Pacioretty carrying them on his back, almost alone offensively, along with Radulov. But Pacioretty was the one that was carrying. Radulov was the playmaker. Pacioretty was the one who had to put the puck in the net. And, he didn't score in the playoffs, but I think that has that's a team thing as much as it is, or more than it is, an individual thing with Max Pacioretty. I think that if you go into a play, as I said, if a good coach like Alain Vigneault, that's a pretty easy game plan to draw up, I think, when you're playing the Canadiens in a 7-game series.
Weekend game plan here on TSN 690. Stu Cowan on the line. And, you know, you look at what's happening now in Washington, and what in the world do you do? Because you don't want to discount winning a President's Trophy and having a competitive hockey team on the ice that will be a team that, you know, gets at least into the final 8 teams still standing in the NHL. But at the same time, if your expectations are higher, you got to do something. Stu, what do the Capitals do here? Is it a case of just removing the C from Ovechkin like the Sharks did with Marleau, or was it Thornton? I can't remember. But and finding another leader like Pavelski, or do they have to do something more drastic? I mean, obviously they're going to lose some players here, free agent wise, and so forth, and maybe a team like the Canadiens can pick the bones and help their team. But I mean, where do you start? What do you do?
That's a good question. I mean, I believe it's more than half the Capitals players' contract expired after this season. And, you know, I heard Pierre LeBrun on the other day with Mitch Melnick in the afternoon. He was saying that that contract that Ovechkin got wasn't the GM who signed him to that contract. It was the owner who wanted to give him that contract. And the owner and Ovechkin are tight, and it'll be interesting to see what they do moving forward. I mean, it's sort of similar when you, let's say, you know, people who are sort of suggesting maybe the Canadiens should look into trading Carey Price, and I'm one who would say I would at least see what you could get for him at this point, because the Canadiens haven't won anything with Carey Price, and the Capitals haven't won anything with Alex Ovechkin. And at some point, you wonder if maybe it's worth trying something different. And with players like that, rather than waiting until the end of their career when you're not going to get much for them, you know, these are guys that would get a lot for them if you were, you know, a lot of teams would take Alex Ovechkin. You know, there's not a lot of guys in the NHL who can put the puck in there on a consistent basis like him. The contract, obviously, is a bit of an issue. But Washington, I think they got to try and do something. For whatever reason it is, they just, you know, it's not, they can't get past the second round. It's not even like getting to the conference final and winning. There's just something there that you know, the Ovechkin saying, you know, they're saying he was playing hurt during that final game, which I hope is the case, because, you know, he one of the goals was a result of him not getting the puck out of the zone. Another goal, the other goal was a result of him just being lazy on a back check. And you know, Barry Trotz, I think when, you know, they asked him about Ovechkin after the game and he wouldn't answer, he said, emotionally, I'm not ready to answer that question. That says a ton. And the thing is, it's not, Barry Trotz isn't the first coach who's become frustrated with Alex Ovechkin. I mean, Dale Hunter decided he'd rather go back and coach junior than stay in Washington coaching that team. So I think there's something that has to be done, but, just from, you know, listening to Pierre LeBrun the other day, and, you know, Pierre LeBrun's as plugged in as anybody in the NHL as far as the media is concerned. And I think, as he said, it would be the owner who would have to decide if they were going to go forward without Alex Ovechkin. And as LeBrun was saying, he doesn't think that'll happen.
He is Stu Cowan. Stu Cowan 1, by the way, on Twitter, if you want to follow him there, hockeyinsideout.com. Check out the show. Are you guys going through the summer with the online show?
No, we'll do one around the draft, maybe just before and just after the draft, and then most likely one also just after July 1st, once all the free agent sweepstakes and that happened. But so there'll be a couple over the summer, but there won't be one every week. There's you can only have to bring up the same stuff so many times, right?
Oh, we know. Thanks so much, Stu.
No problem. Anytime, Matthew. Have a good day.
The Weekend Game Plan. Listen live Saturdays and Sundays from 7 to 9 a.m. on TSN 690.